From the land of the Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of July. It's USDA Report Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the numbers as released by the United States Department of Agriculture with Jackie Vick. She's at Stuart Peterson. And then a bit later in the program, we'll check in on the ever-important weather forecast. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, I'll update you on the agricultural news for the day, and we'll discuss what my next week might look like. I'll be on the road. Decided to take a little trip right through the heart of some of that rough country in North Dakota.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this is the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Jackie Vakes is here from Stuart Peterson. Jackie, we'd usually start off with the numbers from the USDA report released at 11 o'clock, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. But I'm kind of thinking maybe the weather forecast at the noon hour was more important, and that's been what the market decided to trade on.
Oh, there's no question about it, Todd. You know, when you look at this, we are certainly solidly in a weather market. And we had a change in the midday forecast, which put a lot of pressure on the corn and the bean market. We'd followed that. And so we saw, you know, corn was supported above the 50% retracement on December 17th, which is a, you know, it's a good thing. Let's just put it that way. I'd rather see it there. That's 395 and 5/8. Beans resisted going. They went into the gap that was left behind, but they resisted going all the way down to that 10.17 and 3/4 in the November beans, so they've managed to, they've actually made a pretty nice comeback toward the end of the day. When you looked at D-Sweet, it stayed above the 10-day moving average, so it doesn't say to me that it's probably anything more than quite a bit of profit-taking. And, you know, it's a circumstance where the numbers, for some people, I guess, were a shock. For most of us, they really weren't. Livestock was active today. Live cattle and feeders both limit up on better cash. But the pools were really limited in size. I mean, when you looked at August live cattle, basically there's only 8 at the limit up right now. And if you look at August feeder cattle, there's only 1. So it's earlier in the day, they were around 650 and 250. But it just kind of dwindled itself down as we got toward this point. So, you know, it's just been a very interesting day at the markets. I think there were a lot of people who thought that we were going to really go zooming higher.
What do you think of the USDA report? That's what many people thought would be pushing the changes, that along with weather. But those numbers came out and the market decided it better go down.
It did. When it first came out, beans actually kind of bounced back, and they had been down 7 or 8 before the report then came bouncing back. Corn, on the other hand, never really got any kind of footing and, ended up down around 15 or 16. When you look at the general report, you know, we had a higher acreage report in June for corn, and that, of course, resulted in higher production for 17-18. And then you take that and add on 75 million bushels of higher carry-in due to the grain stocks report that we got at the end of June. So, you know, that pushed that ending stocks number up to 2.325 billion bushels, and that's a 415 million bushel increase over last month. You know, the one bright spot was that they did up feed usage in 17-18 by 50 million, and that was good news. Average farm price, $3.30, that was down a dime from last month. When you took apart the beans and you really, you know, had to understand they have expectations for an increased acreage harvest area, that led to just a 5 million bushel increase in production for 17-18. Carry-in dropped 40 million for 16-17 because of the grain stocks. And so that ended up giving us a 35 million bushel drop on 17-18. Farm price, 940, up a dime. And when you looked at wheat, I think wheat is the one that most people are really banking on to carry everything along the way. Production on all wheat went up 29 million bushels due to an increase in winter wheat yield. That jumped up to 49.7, 8/10 of a bushel. Spring wheat came in at 423 million bushels. That's 21.7% less production than last year, but, you know, definitely higher than expected. The interesting part was the farm cash average jumped from 430 to 480. It had a 50-cent jump, which, you know, we normally don't ever see that in corn or even in beans. But wheat, you just never know what's going to happen.
So where does the market go from here?
Well, I think, you know, the market itself quickly turned its attention back to weather. You know, the numbers were not really unexpected. Unfortunately, they came in a little bit higher than a lot of the guesses. So I think as we go forward, as long as we held on to some of those very important support levels, we're probably going to fight right around in this area until we either get a new forecast that says it's going to get drier again and the heat is going to stay around longer, or we will begin to work our way lower until we get that far. You know, the one thing I've been looking at, Todd, and I know I dropped you a note, and I'm sure you didn't have time to ask Emerson, but, you know, we talk about South Dakota and North Dakota almost like they're a desert, you know, because of how dry they are. And yet when you look at their humidity levels, you know, you're talking a 64% to 68% humidity level at night. And so you've got to wonder, I mean, that certainly says to me that there's a crop growing out there. You just have to ask yourself, you know, how low does that humidity level really have to get to cause us to have major pollination problems or major bean problems? And so I think we're going to continue in this crazy pattern that we've been in with people jumping in and out, trying to figure out what they want to do, and nobody knowing for sure. So we've got at least probably another couple of weeks of this coming down the pike.
No, I'm going to take off next week. And on Wednesday, I don't know whether I will or won't talk to you next week. I should be making my way through North Dakota by then. I'm going to take a look at the crop in Illinois and Iowa, of course, run up along the border there through the Dakotas and into North Dakota and try to check that crop out too, so we'll know more about that. Anything from today's reports on the world numbers that you found of interest?
I'm thinking maybe I should interview you next week. Huh?
We'll see. I don't...
On the world numbers, again, a situation where we saw production go up. Production went up on corn by 3 million metric tons. Carryout went up by 6.5 million metric tons. Both of these were higher than expected. Basically, I think it should be noted, though, that the new number of 200.81 million metric tons of carryout is 26.7 million metric tons less than 16-17. So it does still say, you know, that yes, we're increasing some crop size, you know, some size in the carryout, but we're not anywhere near where we are this year. You know, most of those increases, surprisingly, came out of larger crops in Vietnam, Mexico, and Argentina. You know, we don't often think of Vietnam and Mexico as being in the picture, but they definitely are. When you look at beans, production was increased by just a 500,000 metric ton. Carry-in of the old crop jumped 1.5 million. And that led to an increase in the carryout of 1.3 million metric tons. Nothing, you know, nothing else, basically. They had a little bit better crush, a little bit better other usage, but it just couldn't offset everything that was there. Wheat, carrying increased 1.5 million metric tons. This was offset by a drop in production and increases in usage, which led actually to a drop in carryout of about 500,000 metric tons. So at the world level, I mean, it's not like we're not running out of wheat, let's just put it that way. But it definitely is an indicator of perhaps less wheat being grown just because of corn being competitive, all those things that are going on.
You always dig around and find something interesting. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Well, I thought it was interesting when I read that Dow Chemical said they are willing to sell an arm of their corn seed business to CITIC, LLC, which happens to be a Chinese conglomerate in Brazil, and that would satisfy the Brazilian regulations in connection with the Dow-DuPont merger. Now, the only way that they will sell that is if the merger goes through. I mean, the expectation is that it will happen, but now again, you know, we have China owning another portion of the seed business that normally belonged to the U.S.
Hey, Jackie, thank you. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. A couple of quick things happening in the agricultural news for the day. The Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, is out with its latest estimate of baseline funding available to write the next farm bill. The CBO says the latest farm bill saved much more than expected on food stamps and crop insurance. And Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says the Budget Office expects more savings over the next 10 years.
Commodity programs are expected to drop in costs from $8.5 billion to $5.5 billion. That drop includes a major assumption by CBO that corn and soybean farmers will overwhelmingly switch from ARC County to PLC for their Title I program.
As producers seek a more certain price floor amid continued low prices and as crop insurance remains a popular safety net program.
Crop insurance spending is expected to go up by about $4 billion per year in the later years of these estimates, which would put it back around $8 billion per year. Meanwhile, food stamp spending is expected to average 68.1 billion per year over the coming decade.
$7.5 billion a year less than the last Farm Bill, but Grassley points out funding for 37 Farm Bill programs will expire without new funding, while numerous groups are calling for new spending in other areas.
The bottom line is that the budget challenge in this Farm Bill will be very hard to overcome, perhaps as hard as it's ever been.
Especially since budget writers could demand additional savings in government programs, House Ag Appropriators have already proposed a $5 billion cut in FY18 food stamp spending. Let's follow that up with some news from China. Demand already looks good for this season's soybean crop. China is the number one purchaser, of course, of U.S. soybeans, buying 60% of American soy exports every year. The U.S. Soybean Export Council, along with several American and Chinese organizations, will host a Chinese delegation of buyers at a soybean trade contract agreement signing ceremony. The event takes place on the 13th of July. That's tomorrow in Des Moines, Iowa. The exact volume of the purchase will not be known until tomorrow, but it should be quite large. At similar events last year, China buyers purchased 9 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans worth more than $4 billion. And finally today, dicamba. While Arkansas farmers are in the very early stages of a 120-day moratorium on using dicamba, Missouri farmers may have a much shorter time to wait for their delay to end. Missouri Ag Director Chris Chin told AgriPulse that the department's intentions are for the ban to be more of a short pause in her state. The goal is to get approved products back in the hands of farmers by the end of this week. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Wednesday, the United States Department of Agriculture released its July World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Todd Hubbs is here. He's agricultural economist here on campus to try to help us make some sense of them. What were the changes in the reports today that you found of most interest?
The change in the corn feed and residual number, it's down 75 million bushels. I don't know if I found it interesting as much as I expected that after the June 1st acreage report or grain stocks report came
out. It's always good when something goes your way.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, that looks about right. Which, you know, increased the ending stocks for 16, 17 in corn by 75 million bushels, which brings a higher carry out. I wasn't surprised that they didn't change the yield, even though we've heard of a lot of issues, especially in the Northern Plains and Western Corn Belt, just too early. Even though some people in the poor Southern Indiana is just drenched in rain and in parts of the Dakotas are parched, it starts to sound like there may be something out there, but they didn't change it. And I think the August report's going to be where we start to see that come in. Other than that, soybeans, I think probably the most surprising number to me was they increased soybean exports for the 16-17 marketing year, 50 million bushels, which is a large increase this late in the marketing year. And we have had stronger than expected exports with the Brazilian production we've seen. There's a lot of reasons for that. We had a really low soybean price there for a while. We were very competitive. There's some issues with Brazil getting their beans out of the country. 50 million seems a lot. We weren't, and I think a lot of that was on outstanding sales. We'll see with this price run up if those sales get pushed back into the next marketing year. Maybe not, but we'll see as we move along. But 50 million is a lot. And they reduced crush again by 10 million bushels. Soybean meal exports haven't been there for us, and you know, crush has been going sort of weak through the first part of this year.
They increased cash price by a dime.
They did.
For soybeans.
A dime.
You have long been an advocate of making cash sales. or making sales on the soybeans. You started doing that in the range where we are right now, back in December. I suppose, are you still in that same form at this point?
I'd be lying if I said that dollar price run-up didn't surprise me a little bit based off those reports. I still am in that place. And we might have some yield issues out there. It's still 89.5 million acres of soybeans. And we're still too early to think about yield. And we can think about it. We can talk about it. We can put a weather premium in the market, maybe expecting it. But I'm still in that place. I haven't really changed that opinion very much. We saw soybeans kind of come back some today. How far they'll come back, I'm not sure. But as we move through the rest of this market year, if those export numbers come in and we keep lowering ending stocks, that'll be positive. We're still going to have a large soybean crop.
Yeah, still, we lowered or change on the ending stocks by, 35 million for this year and 40 million for next year. So we're at 460 now for ending stocks for this year and 410 for next year. These are
still, 410 for this year, 460 for next year.
Yeah, these are extraordinarily big numbers.
Those are really large numbers. I mean, we're looking, like right now, the stocks to use for the old crop here is 10%. And their projection for 17-18 right now sits at 10.9. You know, it's a lot of soybeans, and Brazil still has a lot of beans, and we'll see how it turns out. This was a really nice run-up in soybeans, and somewhat muted, but still a nice run-up in corn prices. I think pricing is a good idea. But having said that, you know, the weather's going to tell the tale as we move through the rest of the summer.
And USDA has the average cash price for the coming year for soybeans at, $9.40?
$9.40.
That was up a dime, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
Corn at $3.30.
I know, and I've not been that low on corn. And I still feel like corn's going to be upper threes, even though we're seeing, and it could go higher, depending on what the yield would be. I'm not that low on corn. But we're talking the marketing year average.
Yeah, and so, USDA, as you said, still has not changed their yields and won't now until we get to the crop production report. That's the next one out. The first one, actually,
in August.
Their yield at 170.7 for corn and 48 bushels the acre for soybeans. I don't know anybody that's using 170.7 anymore, anything that high, I don't think.
No. I think the trade had it around 169, somewhere in that range. I think that's right, maybe a little lower, depending on what we see. But you know, I've been following the weather, everybody's been following the weather. You know, it's spotty. Dry conditions are spotty. We've had some issues throughout the Corn Belt, and then some places are just blessed with rain. So we'll see how it goes. These next few weeks are going to be key. As corn starts to pollinate, we'll see. But I expect it to come down from 170.7. I think most people do.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, Todd.
That, of course, is Todd Hubbs. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this ridge. We've been watching it as it's set up over Montana, parts of North Dakota. Where do you expect it to go, and what kind of conditions will it cause?
Well, the ridge of high pressure actually has been temporarily knocked down by a cool air mass that moved through the Canadian prairies and the northern U.S. plains. In the last 24 hours, the ridge will regroup and reestablish itself as we move from Thursday into Sunday. And during that time period, the ridge axis will run from Arizona and New Mexico straight northward into Saskatchewan, Canada, including parts of Montana. And that will be the position of the ridge as we go into Sunday afternoon. And it looks like the ridge will be quite intense once again by that point in time. Most of the western United States has seen quite a bit of a cool off here over the past couple of days, but we will see the heat get back to levels that are certainly very high for this time of year, 100-degree readings all the way into southern Canada expected by Sunday. Now, the ridge itself will stay out to the west for a little while longer, but as we go into the week next week, it will start creeping to the east, and it will likely work its way into the plains as we get out towards Wednesday and Thursday of next week. So a week from now, we'll start seeing the hotter air moving into parts of the Midwest. So some of the model data suggests that there will be a little bit of a cool front that will precede the heat, and so the ridge may actually get flattened out a little bit as it comes over the western Corn Belt around Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. So the hottest weather may still be about 8 or 9 days away, occurring at the end of next week through that second weekend of the month and on out towards the 26th of July. During that period, let's say the 20th through the 26th, will be the hottest period. We'll likely see temperatures in the 90s over a big part of the Midwest. Readings over 100 are expected to occur along the Missouri River and close by through the valley area there. We'll see the hottest temperatures. So obviously there's a lot of time between now and when the heat really kicks in, and so there's opportunity for changes to take place. That leaves a little bit of doubt as to how the impact might be. But we're pretty confident that we will heat up, though, by the time we get to the end of next week.
For lack of a better term, I will call these Ridge Rider thunderstorms that came through in the last couple of days. Because the ridge is to the west and the north at the moment, will that next set, if they are there, be a bit north of where they did the last time around? And can we expect any rainfall?
Well, I think that there will be opportunities for rain to occur. Most of the precipitation that's occurred over the past couple of days has been associated with that cool air mass, actually the frontal boundary that brought the cooler air and knocked the ridge down. So it's a little different from the convective complex of thunderstorms that often occurs at the peak of the ridge and comes rolling down the front side of the ridge. We look for that to take place as we move forward through this next week. It will occur periodically, and right now it looks like most of those thunderstorms will probably occur from parts of Minnesota into Michigan and northern Indiana and northern Ohio. The further southwest you go in the Corn Belt, the less likely significant rain events will be, although I certainly don't want to imply there won't be any rain in those areas. It just is that the greatest rainfall will be in northern and eastern parts of the Midwest as we wait for the ridge to come eastward. And so we will gradually dry down. We're already quite dry in South Dakota, southwest Minnesota, Nebraska, parts of Iowa, and doing so in parts of Kansas. And, of course, Illinois still has a big area in the south that is too dry, along with southeastern Missouri. All of these areas may get some showers in the coming week, but there's not going to be enough to counter evaporation, and we will have a net drying bias during this period of time. Now, the frontal boundary that's still moving through the Midwest today still has potential to produce some heavier amounts of rain from southern Iowa and central Illinois southward. It's a one-day to a day-and-a-half event. Once that's over, then everything I just said is going to be valid.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you being with us for the day.
Have a great day.
Hey, you too, Drew. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.